Talking Bollocks, a Go Loud original podcast. Sponsored by Right Style Furniture. Right price, right style, right now. Visit rightstyle.ie.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
Are you still sitting on a beanbag and you're sitting in them like you're 17?
Grow up and head to Right Style Furniture. They've got proper, comfy, stylish gear and they're Irish and family run too.
The house packages are class. For just €3,649, you get an electric sofa set, full dining setup, and beds with mattresses. That's a serious bang for your buck.
I got my corner sofa off them, and I haven't stood up since.
They've got locations in Fonthill, Belgard, and now Omni Park, open every day and late on a Thursday and Friday in Fonthill and Omni.
One-stop shop for kitting out the gaff. Don't say we never looked after you.
Exactly. Right price, right style, right now. Visit www.roystyle.ie and use promo code GET10 for 10% off.
What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a little more. Throw your whip in it now. Tell your body okay. Work it hard and long. When you finish that.
The hip knocker. Right, what's the crack, everybody? So, we're actually away this week. Well, I'm away. I'm on a holiday for the first time this year, just throwing it out there. So what we're going to do is we're going to put a few bits together from our favourite episodes, a few parts from our favourite episodes over the last few months. We're going to throw them all in together and create one big episode as a best of. So have a listen and enjoy the episode and let us know what you think.
I'm trying to think what to add on to that. Yeah. Without just saying, yeah, I'm here as well.
Calvin.
So I'm here as well.
I think that actually works.
Hope you enjoy.
Boom. It's me, Terry Flower.
It's me, COB.
And this week, me, DOD.
Danny, you've had a rough couple of years now.
Yeah.
Recently.
Yeah.
Where obviously you lost, Mark, you mentioned at the start. Yeah. What's that been like for you?
Earth shattering, you know, devastating. I'm still trying to figure out and go through the grief stages. I don't even know where I am in it. I don't know if I've even acknowledged that it's happened yet, because it's such a weird thing to have known someone my whole life, because I know him nearly 30 years, over 30 years, and to have been on such a monumental life journey together that I'm the only person, besides obviously Glenn, but Glenn, I know him nearly 12 years more than I know Glenn, but to be on that kind of a curve through life with somebody and then for them to just gone. It's mad. It's a mad thing to try and deal with. So I think for me, I've always been one that tends to go like straight in, black hole, see you later, like peace out, see you all next year with everything. So I'm all in. If I'm doing bad stuff, I'm all in on the bad stuff. So I'm, you know, I'd say most of last year, I was trying to tell people to hold on to my ankles because I'm probably going to go down a big deep hole here. So I try to look in the past and go, right, when anything devastating's gone on in my life, what have I done? And I've gone off the rails every time. And then I've tried to hope that music's going to pull me back in again, or my love for music or something else is going to pull it in. And 9 times out of 10, looking back, Mark was normally the person who pulled me back.
Mm-hmm.
And to not have him around, I was terrified, to be honest, of what I was become, getting bitter or whatever. You never know where you'd end up these days. And then, so when it happened, I don't know why I did, maybe 2 weeks after he passed away, and I got a friend to give me a number of a therapist. And I called him up and I said, I think this might be the calm before the storm, because I feel like I'm all right, but I know me and I just want someone to keep an eye on me, because I don't have that arm on the shoulder anymore to just pull me back if I'm a bit, you know, wayward and stuff. And then, so I started talking to a therapist and didn't quite know why I was doing it originally, because I'm like, I'm all right, nothing's going on and this, that and the other. But over the weeks and then over the months and how grief changes and turns on you, and you think you're all right, but you're not. And then all of these different things, and to be able to be walked through that with someone who is a professional, because you can ask your mate for help, but also a lot of times they're not professional. So a lot of times your mate will go, ah, fucking, we'll get down a few, have a few gargles and try and sort it out. And that's the worst thing. Because I go, 1, 2, fucking see you later, I'm gone.
Yeah.
So I think that was a massive one for me to try and reason with it and try and go, what the fuck, what are you taking him for? Like, look, he's, you know what I'm saying, when I say salt of the earth, he's like born rare in James Street, he's never cheated on his missus, he's like, he is the stand-up guy that I base my life on, and go, he's stoic. Do you know what I mean? If I want to be any, I idolized him, you know, growing up. So to not have him around, I'm like, my guardrails are off. So having a therapist there was great. I've got a beautiful, beautiful missus who's been there through, like I said, through COVID, because it went COVID and then Mark passed away. So it's just like these fucking mad 3 years that I don't know what's going on. Like I'm living this dream life and then just nightmare life. And then I'm trying to just come out from it a little bit. But like I said, I went off the rails, you know.
Was that your first time ever talking to a therapist?
Years ago when I was a kid, I talked to a therapist, yeah, over just certain different things. Growing up in a musical household, but my parents weren't alcoholics, but they, you know, they drank a lot.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And yeah. I don't think, like back then, I think even back to the dyslexic thing, if you had told my mum and dad that I had dyslexic when I was a kid, you'd probably say, like, thought the kid had AIDS or something. Because it was like a death sentence or something. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's like they wouldn't have accepted it even if you tried to tell them.
Yeah.
And it was just different times, and it's hard looking back and to be mad, or because that was the time, you know, oh, you can't see the road. Come here, standing between me and your mammy, you'll see the road, you know, kind of vibe. And I felt like the stuff that went on in the gaff was just detrimental to me as a kid. And I didn't know because I'd been in therapy as a kid and stuff. And I guess maybe something in me knew that this is a time you need to do something. Like Glenn is a great source of all that kind of stuff because he's, I think, 12 or 13 years sober now.
I'm going there.
Some going, yeah. And he lived primarily here as well. And so Ireland is like one of the worst places.
Yeah, it's a drinking culture, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what else do you eat or not do that anybody else thinks there's something wrong with you? Like if I said, no, I don't want mayonnaise in my sandwich. You don't want mayonnaise? Mm-hmm. Why are you addicted to mayonnaise? Like, is something wrong with you, you know? It's fucking mad, you know?
Yeah.
But it's incredibly hard here because we're so social and the weather's not great and most of our social lives are set around pubs.
Yeah.
So yeah, so I went off the rails this year. I couldn't write. I couldn't verbalise because my sparring partner wasn't there anymore. So I didn't have anything to throw off and just like throwing a ball and it's not coming back. And there was one lyric I was trying to articulate. It's like, you took him too fucking soon. You know what I mean? Take anybody else but him. It's a lovely family, you know, beautiful kids and beautiful family. And I came up with this lyric, which was like a shooting star across the sky in a second you were gone. Why do stars that light up twice as bright only burn for half as long? Mm-hmm. And it was just like, why did he always take the good ones early? And I just thought, like, after saying now how he means to me, and I feel like that's the first time the lyric came around where I was like, I nailed it. And at that point, Thorn kind of came out of my side, and I just, it was like verbal diarrhea. I was like, couldn't stop it from writing down. So I was like, all of it. So I needed something to maybe get me over that. I think therapy was a massive one, being able to articulate how I feel to somebody else who doesn't have a horse in the race. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying? Because what am I going to do now, this, that and the other? And depending on who you talk to, some people have invested interest in whether we continue on as the band or we don't, or how I feel, or do you know what I mean? So people would push it in. And to have somebody who's not my girlfriend who thinks, because I'm, like I said, I'm a man's man at the end of the day, and I don't want me missus thinking I'm second guessing myself or I'm up and down left and right or whatever. But I realise that I need somebody there that I can just verbalise all this stuff and then just go and wipe my feet as I'm coming back in the door, and then I can come back in, I can actually be a boyfriend to me missus, and hurt for her not to have to listen to all of the stuff that I've been going on about, you know. So that was a huge one. And then so I started writing again, and then I came back for Christmas, and this was just a story I don't mind telling you guys, but I came back for Christmas and I had it in my mind, and I says, right, I'm going to have a clean Christmas. I'm not going to drink, because it's a big thing to come home. It's the first time I've been home for a long time, because I know I'm just going to get asked about Mark every day, or, you know, isn't it sad he's gone and this, that and the other. And I said, I'm not going to drink. And then I got on the airplane, and by the time I'd landed, I was pissed. And I was just whiskeys and this, that and the other on the plane. And I landed straight to the pub, Guinness's, and it was a bit of a blur. Christmas was for me, and I didn't realise how triggering it was for me. Dublin in general is triggering, because I grew up,
best memories I have,
every
he's in
part
the
of it, and he's there in every corner he's standing on here, even here Diggs Lane. I taught with him here in this building, you know. So I don't normally do a thing on Christmas Day where I go into Temple Street with the kids in there, and I've done it now 14 years in a row, where we go in 9 o'clock in the morning, go in, have an amazing time with the nurses in the morning, go around, visit the wards with John and there, the party's amazing guy. And then so Christmas Eve, I was just like, right, cool, I'm not drinking. I got through that. And then as soon as I got to my brother's gaff, got pissed again. And then just started drinking and drinking. And I just ruined Christmas for myself.
Yeah.
And I ruined the memory of being here. So I says, December 27th, I got back to the UK, and I was like, enough's enough. That's it. I'm finished. I'm finished with that fucking 44-year-old fella who's like, are we at a party again, is it? Oh, you have to have one sip. Oh, what's going on? What else is going on? It's like, I can't be doing this anymore, man. Mm. Like, if you're going to face grief and you're going to face something that's that important to you, you have to do it sober.
Mm. Such a mature decision to make. I know you said you're 44, but your fellow has literally the world at his feet. You probably have, there's no end to the amount of network and reach out and resources that you actually have. But for you to come in and say, listen, this is not the way to go with this. It's a dangerous cocktail to mix up here.
Yeah.
I don't want to keep dwelling on it.
No, go away.
What's it like being on stage realm?
It's really strange. It's really strange because a lot of the venues I've played before, so I have like, it's almost like going to battle with somebody. I have him burnt on my right side. That's where he was, wingman. If I messed up a lyric or whatever, I look over and he's giving it back to me or whatever. We tried to change the formation on stage because it was the three piece. And then now we've kind of, we have a new guitarist, Ben. His name's Ben Weaver, but his middle name's Mark. what are the chances of that? Ben Mark Weaver. And the other bassist is called Ben, so we have two Bens now. But it's really strange. So there's a certain amount of, we're not trying to wipe over any memories. I'm just trying to create new ones and then try and create and then just kind of deal with things as they come up. So like there's certain songs that are mental to sing now without him, you know, because I'm now doing all of his parts.
Mm.
So even in We Cry Now, I'm doing the rap, and even a song we have called If You Could See Me Now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is that's,
it's very personal to you, that song as well.
Ah, it's killer. It's killer. I mean, his verse in that, in second verse, is probably one of the best verses I've ever heard. And he wrote that because his dad had passed away when he was a young lad. He was 13 when his dad passed away. And then he had to kind of set him off on a trajectory, whatever. So he'd never talked about that ever publicly or even privately. But then he wrote that verse, you know, and it's just such an honor to sing his lyrics about him and his dad. But now I'm singing it about him.
Mm.
So it's layers of pain on top of pain on top of pain. But I just find that that's the best way I can get it out. So I've sang it everything I've ever done. You know, I sang at church as a kid, sang at me communion. Me mom passed away. She wanted me to sing a song, I'm Yours, that was on the first album. So I sang it at her funeral. Me dad, we sang Piano Man. All my whole family got up and sang at my dad's funeral. And then we sang, myself and Glenn got up and sang at Mark's funeral. So music is, it's tied into us. And it's like, how dare you not perform, you know what I mean? Or even continue on this journey that we've been on. But yeah, no, I appreciate the question as well, because it's kind of what I'm thinking myself. How is it? And it changes from sometimes it's good, and then other times I'm waiting for the cue for him to do something and he's not there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or it doesn't come or whatever. Or so, you know what I mean?
It's, yeah.
Same thing with anyone who's lost anybody. You kind of tend to, you know, like in those moments where you get something really fucking good's happening. That's me boys. Yeah. Call him up.
And yeah.
He's weird, you know. Obviously, there's a very public front with the script and where, you know, we have to be jovial and la 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 all the time. He'd go to war for you, this fella, do you know what I mean? But we'd always like be thinking about what we're going to be doing, what we're going to be saying. So I always feel like, yeah, I just feel like I'm down a man, do you know what I mean, at this point.
And today we're joined by
Sabina Brennan.
So you were talking about basically infants and how their brains form, teenage, how your brain forms till you're about 25, and then you said your brain starts shrinking at 30.
Mm.
Does that mean from 30 onwards you're going to face a cognitive decline?
So this is the good news. I kind of want to...
You're worried about that, are you?
But no, I'll tell you the truth.
How old are you, Calvin?
I'm 30. I went 30 in November, right? And in the last year I've been on kind of like a health buzz, because it's really... No, it has, didn't it? Like when I turned 30, it really hit me.
Yeah.
And like in the last year, I've been whacking the gym over and I'm trying to make choices for my future, like bleeding. I'm getting onto financial advisors and all. Like I'm fucking proper changed. So I seen a thing that when you turn 30, your muscle mass starts to shrink 50%, increases 50% at the rate it starts to shrink. So it's like, use it or lose it.
Yeah.
So I was like, right, grand. And now you're saying that your brain starts to shrink at 30. Is there anything you can do to come to reverse that?
Yeah, no, that's the whole point I'm trying to make is, and it's the same with the physical stuff. So like a lot of people would say, you know, that, you lose your muscle mass as you age. Well, actually you lose your muscle mass because you stop using it.
Mm.
You stop doing the stuff. And it's the same really now with the brain. So the things that I'm talking about that are really good for your brain health, so physical exercise, kind of off, you know, around that age, maybe people stop playing team sports, you know, they stop going to the gym or whatever. So that's your physical exercise. So that's going to impact on your brain. Maybe maybe you've got married, you know, or you're in a steady relationship or whatever. So your social circle might be kind of closing down. You're not going out with as many people as you used to. Maybe you've hit a point in your job where you can kind of coast along. So you're not being challenged by your job. You don't have to learn anything new. You kind of go, I have enough to pay the mortgage. I have enough to do this. So they're all things that are really good for your brain. So it's not age related as far as I'm concerned. It's lifestyle related. Mm-hmm. So the age thing being just an age that our society starts to just kind slow of down, change kind of,
yeah.
and slow down. And if you think about it getting older, like people laugh at me when I say this, but like I was brought up to respect my elders. And that included that if I was on a bus and I had a seat and someone got on that was older than me, I'd stand up and give them the seat. But actually sitting is bad for us. And actually really what we should be doing is making older people stand more. It sounds terrible. But actually the whole point being is we shouldn't be taking life easy as we get older. I hate the idea of retirement. I said to you earlier that too little stress is as bad for your brain as too much stress. So retirement, unemployment, where you're not being challenged, boredom, you know, they are really not good for your brain for a couple of reasons. Well, boredom leads to depression. What gives us joy in life is challenges, is achieving things, doing new things. If you're not doing anything, well, where's the buzz? You're not getting your dopamine hit. You're not getting that sense of achievement. Even something small, like just making a list every day, ticking something off a little list, that'll give you a dopamine buzz. But if you're kind of just doing nothing, not challenging anything, your brain also, it's a really high energy organ, right? So it uses about 25% of the nutrients. It only weighs 2% of your body mass, but it consumes 25% of the nutrients that you take in. So it uses up a huge amount of energy and it can't afford to waste any of that energy on brain cells that aren't being used. So it has a process called apoptosis where it goes around and it literally prunes away the brain cells. So your brain is shrinking from that perspective as well. So, yeah, I mean, you know, you got to just really go out there and, you know, take life by the short and curlies and really just kind of live it. And
so that term use it or lose it still applies to your brain then?
Absolutely.
Sorry.
Absolutely. Use it or lose it. It's actually really a brilliant analogy. Your brain is not a muscle, but it works really well that way. Yeah, you got to use it.
So, you know, the term you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Does that apply to humans? So like, let's say I wanted to learn a new language now. Should I be looking at it as, it's no point, I'm fucking 30, I should have done it when I was 15?
No, it would be easier when you were 15. So basically the interesting thing about the teen years is, it's probably one thing we got right, is that neuroplasticity is enhanced in our teen years. So our ability to learn is much more enhanced when we're younger. So that's actually a time when actually studying, if you want to learn things, etc., it's a good time for that because it's enhanced. So it would be easier possibly when you're younger, but it doesn't mean that you can't do it.
Yeah.
And similarly, so yes, go learn new things. That's really, really important. Some people will be better at learning languages than others. I mean, my thing about it is, like, I loved going to university and I really excelled at it because I was studying something that I find fascinating, you know, so it was easy. And that's a really interesting thing is curiosity.
Yeah.
If you're naturally curious about something, neuroplasticity is enhanced in your brain. It's easier to learn. But the really interesting thing about it is that if you engage in, I'd love to tell school teachers, if any school teachers listening, right? Let the kids do something that they're naturally curious about, naturally interested in, right? They learn it really quickly. Neuroplasticity is enhanced, but even after you stop doing the task, it remains enhanced for a little bit of an extended period. So that's when you teach them the maths or the stuff that they're not good at, because it will be easier for them to learn that. So to anything in life, if you do something that you love doing, that you're learning, that you're naturally curious about, and then there's something that you've been putting off that you don't really like doing, I wouldn't be a brilliant techie person. You're a techie person. So, you know, if there was something that I had to learn about technology, I should do something that I'm massively interested in, or, you know, and then look at the tech. My brain will be primed to be able to learn that easier. They're great tricks, aren't they?
Mad that is. Like, that, it's actually so interesting. That
it's just everything you were ever told growing up. It's just like, no, that's not how it is. Yeah. It's not how it actually works. Yeah. This is how it works.
And the, teaching new dogs, no, old dogs, new tricks, that really is then about habit. So I think something that I find really interesting and really important to take note of is, so we hear a lot when we're talking about mental health about, you know, we do too much stuff on autopilot, you know, we got to be present in the moment. That's very valid advice, okay? Because when you're present in the moment, you can't be ruminating over things you did wrong or being depressed or being anxious about things that might happen. You're totally focused in the moment. So that's, you know, it's good advice, but it's not the only advice that you need to follow, right? In terms of basically that neocortex, that crinkly part of the brain that we think of as our brain, that uses the most energy, okay? It's much more a higher calorie consumer than the other unconscious parts of the brain that I spoke about. So basically, your brain is constantly trying to find ways to make the most efficient use of the resources it has. That's why diet is really important for your brain.
Yeah.
Because if you're feeding shite into your brain, you know, it's not going to be able to function.
That was going
properly.
To be my next question.
Right, okay. Well, we can come back to that if you want. But basically, so your brain is constantly trying to make efficient use of resources. So it constantly scans your behavior for anything that you do in a repetitious fashion, anything that you do in the same order, in the same time, you know, at the same way, right? And it looks at that and goes, ah, okay, I can give responsibility for that to the basal ganglia, which is in the emotional part of your brain, uses less energy because that's a routine. So it's a routine behavior. Your brain can do that. And all your thinking brain has to do is check in at the beginning and the end. Okay. So it's saved loads of resources that it can use on something else. So that's kind of what happened to a lot of people during the pandemic. Like one day in March, we were all told to go home and work from home. And so on top of the stress and the disrupted sleep that we were experiencing during the panic, you were then told to figure out, how do you work from home if you've never done it before? For some people, how do they homeschool kids, whatever. But on top of that, prior to the pandemic, it was estimated that 40% of our behaviors every day are habitual. Stuff that we do without thinking about it. You don't think about pouring your cereal or brushing your teeth or having your shower in the morning. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You just kind of go through those. So on top of the stress of the pandemic, all our routines were just wiped out. And most of us didn't replace them with new routines. We started behaving randomly. So kind of, when's my first Zoom meeting? No, I won't bother getting out of the PJs until that. And, you know, or maybe I'll leave just the bottom part of the PJs on and put a shirt on the top. And like, when are you going to homeschool the kids? Well, I'm going to go for my walk at 10 today. So the behavior was all random. So your brain couldn't find anything to automate. So it's constantly having to use this neocortex to make very simple decisions, like when am I going to get dressed? When am I going to have breakfast? All those kind of things. And actually, the funny thing is, now you guys don't drink, but a lot of people then during the pandemic, you know, 5 or 6 o'clock, opened the gin or a bottle of wine and they sat down and they tried to watch Netflix or something like that to kind of get out of the whole pandemic thing and maybe munched on sweets. And so loads of us gained weight and became alcoholics because your brain said, there's a routine. Yeah. I can automate that. And your brain doesn't decide whether it's good for you, bad for you, whether it speaks to your goals or doesn't speak to your goal. It's just something that you do in a routine way that it can automate. It's just trying to save resources. So that means when you want to introduce a new habit, it's hard at first because you're using your neocortex. It's effortful. But if you do it the same time, the same place for a repeated number of times, eventually your brain will notice it and give it to your basal ganglia and it becomes effortless. So that's how habits are changed. That's a long-winded way of going back to you to say, yes, you can teach an old dog new tricks,
yeah.
But it's hard. It takes effort.
So, lads, thanks very much for coming in. Obviously, everyone knows it's Willa and Eric. There's a question pile over there, and you have to take a thing from the top there and open it and ask the question.
Okay. The person to your left accidentally casts a spell, causing you to swap bodies and making you miss an important event. What do you do while in their body to get revenge? Wow.
Shave his head and shave his eyebrows.
Cast a spell, causing you to swap bodies, right? But make you miss an important event, but If you're Calvin.
I'm Tarrant.
Oh, sorry, you're Tarrant.
So it's to your left.
Yeah. So him.
So I'm and you, then, you're him, you're him.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm to his left.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's
Oh, right. Okay, so we're going around.
Is that the way it's supposed
to be? Class. I'm there, Willa.
Sorry about that.
I'll get a hit for you, Willa. See, if you put your hands out in front of you,
yeah,
your index finger and your thumb make the letter L to let you know left.
Yeah, but how can you tie your laces, though?
Oh, yeah. We get them out of the box already tied. That's it.
Yeah, but here, that's right.
That is a fucking tough one, isn't it? What do you do with the body to get revenge?
I'd shave his head. I'd shave his head and shave his eyebrows.
Oh, would you?
Mm.
What does it say?
Do you know what I do to you? I'd clear out your whole runner collection and let you walk around in chestnut slices for about 12 months.
You could say the same for him.
Chestnut slices?
Yeah, like proper bleeding. You know them Donegal culgy boots, the brown yokes with boot cut jeans on you? They're bleeding smack box jokes, isn't
they? They all wear.
To be honest, yeah, they all
wear. For anyone that's up to not wearing them brown boots and bleeding gilets,
yeah.
Cop the fuck on to yourself.
They love hair. They boot love
it. Jeez.
Oh, listen, bingo.
Get a grip on yourself, you clown, you.
They love a gilet.
I'll probably end up going to town and getting booted around for next week. What happened to you? Oh, 6 rounds with them brown boots on.
So it says, what would I do? Like, I've been wanting to get revenge on Willa for years now after something he did on me.
And I didn't do it.
I thought you did it. Right. So we did a gig years ago down that lawn for the Irish Scuba Divers Association.
Fucking that lawn. Off, wait,
really? I swear to God.
That's how we roll, yeah. But big underwater. Like.
Yeah. Fucking. So there's about
the anchor brothers to use the call.
Yeah. Yeah.
Heard of anchors.
A submersive audience.
We used two anchors.
85 fishes out of it, right? Oh.
In that lawn, in the Hudson Bay Hotel, wasn't it?
Yeah. And so this, I used to do this routine about my daughter being born in a gaff in Ballymun. It was the home birth routine, right? And it goes on forever and ever. But there's a bit at the end, right? Where so we go to the bedroom now, and it's just me ma, home ma, the midwife, and her sister in the room. And up to that point, she'd been angelic, completely calm, not a bother on her. And then I go, the cue for this is. And then a dark, dark atmosphere comes over the room. And at that moment...
Hang on, I'm just talking about how it normally is played.
So normally when that bit comes on, I've done this in Vicar Street and all, the button gets pressed and Tubular Bells comes on.
Tubular Bells, have you heard that music?
Tubular Bells, it's from Halloween or something, or The Exorcist or whatever.
So what happened was...
And then the reverb comes on and I go, she wasn't angelic anymore. Get this fucking thing out of me! Get me to a hospital! So yeah, Willa on the bleeding system got right with
that. Yeah, so he gave me the CD and he said to me, when I'm on, press the yoke for the CD. So I put the CD down and I went to the Jacks when he was on and I come back. This is the God's honest truth, right? May God strike me down if I'm lying. This is what happens. But when I come back, I looked where I threw the CD and there was about 6 blank CDs with the CD on the yoke because there was nothing written on it. And he's gone through the material, and here I am going, Jesus, which CD is it? I didn't know what one it was, but I knew it was track one. And I just, he's coming up to the bit, and he's going, yeah, my missus had a home birth and all that. So I just grabbed one of the CDs. I goes, this has to be it, like, do you know what I mean? So he goes, I put the CD in.
And a dark, dark atmosphere comes over the room. And instead of do-do-do-do-do-do-do, fucking, I don't feel like dancing to Scissor Sisters. And I'm there like that.
Here he is looking at me like that. And I'm going.
Head me going, you cunt, you're after sabotage me. And Willa's going. And the crowd were just looking at me going, what the fuck is this all about? And all I could think of was, well, yeah, in fairness, you didn't feel like dancing. Good night, kids.
You want to see him eat a lip on him all night. He was sitting there eating dessert. He goes, you're a cunt. You done that on your purpose. I said, I bleeding, didn't I? Genuinely, did you? Did you?
He was laughing so much. I said, you have
to. Oh, so funny. Swear to God. Didn't even the press all his doom, 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 doom. Wake up in the morning.
And I'm there like that going, what the fuck?
So what's the revenge?
The revenge is, I mean, similar. I would say, take all your runners and I would bar you from buying runners for the year. And you'd have to wear shoes. I've never seen you wear shoes, apart from when you're in your tin of fruit going to award ceremonies, picking up awards.
Arctic, you're doing MC now and boxing matches and all. You're like Bruce Buffer going around.
Oh, exactly. Stop. That was unbelievable.
Michael Buffer, sorry.
Michael Buffer.
Bruce Buffer.
Bruce Buffer's Michael Buffer. He
was
the UFC.
Billy
Buffer, I think.
He's Billy Buffer.
Yeah.
Eric Bluffer.
Yeah, I'll just I was a bluffer. Oh, it was an amazing experience. Gibraltar, Dillian Wifi, and they said, do you want to do it? And I says, yeah, fuck it, why not give it a go? And then I arrived and I was in the zone recording for the weekend, into the big truck, all these screens, big production team, and the producer and the director coming out, oh, mate, believe you're the MC. And I was going, yeah, my first time. And my mum goes, what?
I'm only joking with you.
Yeah,
I'm a comedian as well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
My first time doing it, he's like, really?
Said, no, yeah. He went, it must be joking. And you went, yeah, do that as well.
And he says, you've never done this before. I says, no, but I used to do a comedy routine about being a boxing announcer. That's surely the same thing. And he was like, right, so we're going to have to get this guy an earpiece. So they put an earpiece in my ear and just basically told me when to get into the ring and when to get out and stop staring at the ring girls. But I made one mistake. There was like 7 fights on the card. The first 3 weren't televised. The 4th fight was the first one being televised. 2 women, one from London and one from Czech Republic. And the London girl battered the Czech Republic girl, right? Totally unanimous points win. 4 2-minute rounds he did. We stepped into the ring and it was, just say, Mary from London and from Czech Republic, right?
Paradise
and I have
Street.
To say, and the winner by unanimous points decision is London. And all he said was, and the winner by United points decision is... And the referee raised her hand. And I went, oh, sorry, the London girl.
You said a little mistake.
The fella in her corner, he looked at me and he went, you had one job, mate. You had one job.
Told you I'm a comedian, didn't I?
No, that's bad. That.
Today we're joined by...
Killian Phillips.
Killian, you have a load of appearances for the under-21s. Like, you were always in the under-21 squad. What's it like getting the call up to the senior squad?
Ah, mental. Like, I couldn't believe it. Like, I spoke on the phone with the gaffer about 4 weeks before the squad was announced.
He just rings you, does he?
We thought it was fake, to be honest. Like, he texts me on WhatsApp, and we thought it was fake. I thought someone was taking the piss out of me. He was only up from a nap, and I said, oh, stop it, man. I didn't text him back for about half an hour after he texted me. Thought it was fake. Because he texts me saying, do you want to FaceTime, or can I FaceTime you? Like, whenever you're ready. So I thought, like, I'm going to answer the phone and they're all going to be sitting at on the other side of the screen. But then it was him, thankfully, and then spoke to him and didn't say I was in the squad. I didn't say I wasn't in the squad to get me. So I didn't know if he was just seeing how I was liaison with me. And then on the day, like I think the squad was announced at 11 o'clock and, like, all my mates were belling me from 9 o'clock, like, saying, are you in the squad? We hadn't a clue on it. And we were actually playing a game that day, so it wasn't even really on my phone. And then I actually got an email at 10 o'clock saying that I was in the squad. We'd never check my emails, innit? We'd never check my emails ever, so we didn't even see the email, innit? So then I was on Instagram, 10:30. I think the squad was at 11. I was on at 10:30 just flicking through, and then they posted a video of the 4 lads, you know, people called up. Yeah. And then, like...
That video was class.
Yeah, it was sick, yeah.
You need to be doing that more.
That's what I mean, yeah. It was proper, and then I was flicking through it, and, like, I was not the first player, I was not the second player, and I was like, bollocks, I'm not in the squad. And then I was the tour player and I was like, this is mental, man. And me blame phone blew up, and it's like it was always in the 21 squad, but it was never really a start for the 21s. It's like, didn't even start the last game for the 21s. That was in November, and now I'm in the senior squad, you get me? So it's mental. Like, it was just, I couldn't really even believe it, and I couldn't even take it in because we had a game that day, and then Thursday, and I was in the gaff, and, like, I was by myself in the gaff. I was just thinking, what the fuck, man? Like, this is unbelievable. Like, I could actually have a chance to play for my country. Do you get me? I did. Thankfully, it was the best day of my life. It was the whole week leading up to it was just unbelievable. Like, that, it was just didn't even feel real, to be honest.
You were saying the lads looked after you as well.
Yeah, the lads were legends. The lads were deadly. Like, yeah, obviously, you're coming in, you're shitting it. Do you get me? Like, seeing Brady and all, they are like the lads you would have watched for years, like, and, like, you're thinking, oh, like, they might have, like, a bit of ego or that, like that, but no, one of them, like, they were just the lads in it that just had the crack with you and sit around, talk to you, and make sure you were, like, you're not just up in your realms, you get me? Like, they're telling you to come down and chill with the boys and all, so they just made me settle in so easy and stuff like that. So it was from literally day one. After the first day, I was already settled in. I felt like I was there for years, you get me? So yeah. It was perfect.
Who do you think was the best player in this round?
No, I thought it would be Brady. I was just like, just looking at it, like, I've never seen a left foot like that before, you get me? His left foot was just unbelievable. Like, and then, like, the Irish fans, they'll give him stick to give me all the time, saying, like, how's he still playing? He's still playing because he's that good to give me.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter what age you are, if you're a good player, you play.
And he's the most senior in the squad, is he?
Yeah. I think so, yeah. He would be, yeah.
That's the thing with the Ireland squad. It's a very young squad.
That's probably what helped me as well. Yeah. They were all around me, same age. So I knew a few of them going in. I knew Jake, I knew Troy a little bit, I knew Ev, Evan Pearson, I knew Andy Morton. So it was actually all right there. I knew a few of them going in. I wasn't just going in blind to give me. So it was, we settled in straight away and the boys were all blading legends. They were, yeah, they were banging.
Been a mad couple of weeks for you.
Oh, mental, me blading. Luke was telling Neil, me Louis played, and every time I leave the gaff now, I do see someone, I do stop for the picture and stuff like that, and kids waiting outside me gaff and all the other day, 7 kids waiting outside me gaff, don't know how they got me address for the waiting outside me gaff for pictures and stuff like that. Man, they couldn't believe, I couldn't believe, I couldn't have went better, so it's just mental.
Your interview after the first game, at the one in the Aviva, where, is it Tony O'Donoghue?
Yeah.
Unbelievable. I've seen so many people cheer it. Obviously, I see a lot of people cheer it because we know a lot of the same people. So a lot of people support you. But I've seen so many people cheer it, even on Twitter, about how like honest there is and like without being disrespectful, how unpolished you're at. You can tell you're just speaking from the heart. You've no media training. Yeah. You're just talking honestly about it. But one thing that Tony said was, it was a short trip for a long journey to get your Ireland debut. And it's so like, because we're talking now, you're talking about you started playing League of Ireland during COVID.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And now we are playing for Ireland.
Mental, like the way me life's taken off over the last 5 years, like you told me this 5 years ago, would have hit your box for Lions, you give me? Would have just smacked you down and then. But it's just the way it's worked out, like he described it perfectly, innit? It's just been crazy the way it's worked out. A lot of blading sacrifices along the way and a lot of hard work as well. Don't gargle or anything, stuff like that. Like don't gargle, don't really party or anything. Like it's just now coming to work. So it's been a long, long journey, but it's been a nice one. Like, and you know, I'm playing in the Aviva. Like, when you're driving the bus to Castleknock, like from Castleknock into the Aviva, like you're going by Sheriff over the family, and they were all standing out on the road and stuff like that.
Did you see them?
Yeah, seeing them. They were all standing out on the road, the blade noise of them, man. Yeah, like seeing stuff like that, and then obviously the stadium, half the stadium's probably full of Kilbarrick, just jumpless from Kilbarrick and blade, and just me whole family there and stuff like that. It was just perfect. The way I walked out was just, you know, when you're just dreaming as a kid, it's just exactly like that, do you get me?
And this is only the start with it. Like, you are to make your debut there. What, 4 days later, you're starting for Ireland?
Ah, mental, yeah. I didn't expect to start. Like, I never even, when he, now, in fairness, the Gabba names the team before the game. So I didn't get much sleep that night. Anyway, it was shit. But named the team, but he never told me even, like, usually if you're starting, your first start, the Gabba will pull you to the side and just say, yeah, look, you're starting. Just that then you're not shocked, but throw the team up on the board and they just see myself standing. I'm thinking, what the fuck, man? Saying, what are you doing this to me, Gabba, man? I'm shitting it. But it was, the way it walked out was great. Like, it was a perfect little first camp for me. Did you get me? Like, made me debut, man.
I played well in both games.
Started me, yeah. So the performance against Luxembourg was probably not the best, but fairness, it was a long season for all of us, you get me? Like, most of the boys played 40, 50 games, you get me? You're in June, you get me, playing a yoke.
And some of them probably had a week or two off.
That's what I mean, like, we had 3 weeks off before the camp, you get me?
So it was
tough. And look, there was stuff we wanted to work on in the game that, because the next time we play for Ireland, it's a World Cup qualifier, it's the real deal. So it's stuff you wanted to work on and stuff like that. So I wouldn't even be too...
Hung up on it.
Yeah, on the performance, like, to give me for myself. But it was a perfect first camp for me. Yeah.
He did say that he wants a small group of players as well. He said he only wants to work with like 11 to 14 players. But you see how many people are coming in and out of them squads, how many people are starting, how many people are coming in and out of the team completely. So he obviously hasn't got that locked in, you know what I mean? So there's obviously still there's a lot of wiggle room there for someone like yourself to come in.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Establish himself.
I think, like, in terms of midfield, obviously, like, probably something different, to give me, like, I'm tall and get around the pitch and stuff like that, and like there's stuff that I'm probably better at than some of the boys, and though better than me at some of the stuff. So I'm just a different profile in midfielder than we probably have at the minute. So it's just about going back now with St. Mirren and hitting the ground running for September and trying to get in that squad. I think I left a decent impression from the last week and showed that I can probably hold my own in international football. Obviously these games they're only friendlies, and the games coming up in September, like massive games, like totally different games, but to show that I could probably help me own if called upon in September, they'll be ready to go. Yeah,
you're back to pre-season next week.
Next Sunday, yeah, already. I can't believe it. I can't believe it, man.
It's a loud up on the I'd say you're wrecked.
Oh, wrecked. I'm blame bollocks, man. My legs haven't even recovered, man. I'm still in a heap. But yeah, back to pre-season. In fairness, I don't really mind. Once I get back playing football, I don't know what to be doing with myself. Innit? You know, all the lads have walked till 4 o'clock and I'm just sitting around on my 7th coffee of the day, just bored out of my head, you get me? So I don't really mind going back and getting the walk and you know, just keeping the momentum going from last season and getting ready to hit the ground running and see what happens next year.
Yeah, the good thing is, though, like the earlier you get back, if you actually get your season up and running quick, by the time September comes around, you really are putting your hand up there.
That's what I mean.
Because yeah. I think Ireland have, the 6 qualifiers are in bleeding 10 weeks or 12 weeks or something. I think the first one in September, but the middle of November, they're done.
Yeah, September, October, November, that's what they are. So if you hit the ground, like probably bleeding, 8 weeks before September? Oh, no, 12 weeks before, probably September by the time we're back. So you'll be back hopefully then fully ready, fully fit, fully, you know, match ready. So that's what I mean. So hopefully by then I'll be in with a shout, yeah.
Class.
Yeah. I have one more thing for this, boys. Have a good start here, though, yeah.
Right, here we go.
So me first summer when I was back, my first time I was back from Crystal Palace, the boys collected me. So one of the lads gaffs playing fever. Might be in 2 in the morning or something. And we're on Instagram, scrolling through Instagram. See him doing a David Goggins challenge.
I know where this is going.
I know
where this is going.
Oh yeah,
I know where this is going.
Which one is it?
I know.
So whatever.
I know where this is going. Go on, sorry,
kill you. I'm flicking through, so me and three of the boys sitting in the gaff playing FIFA. And I'm starting to doze off, so the boys wake me up saying, come on, we're getting in the car, we're going to the town.
No! Kill you, I love
bro, I'm in my life. So whatever, we get into town, and the boys have a lot of eggs in the car. Yeah, we still don't know what we're doing, but they're in the car. So I'm saying, what are we doing, boy? What are we doing? Terence Powers out doing the David Goggins challenge. Only 4 hours he goes on a run. What getting them? So we actually think you were meant to do the run, but you missed that flight, didn't you? Yeah, you missed that flight. Remember that, yeah. That's what we were watching your live. You went live, didn't you?
Yeah.
And then you were saying you're going out of four.
I was going live.
That's what the boy is saying, yeah. So anyway, we're across. Like, obviously, you can only drive on one side of the Liffey. It's a one-way road. I'm like, where the fuck is this fella? Do you get me? So we were always seeing your video and you were always running by the Liffey. Do you get me? So like, we're on this side, the Liffey coming down, you're running this way. And you see a big ginger. I know it's just bouncing down the road like that. Oh, like, there he is, boys. We're going to slaughter him. We're going to splatter him. So first we threw eggs at them as they were going past. I don't know how you didn't see it. That's how the eggs were on the floor.
No,
so we tried to throw eggs at them as they were going past. We missed them, so we said we'd pack up. And then, like, jogging past, we all just hop out of the car and bomb, 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 bomb. Eggs off the back of my elbow, eggs off the back of the nut.
I got an egg in the wrist, and I swear to God, I said, that must be boiled. And nearly broke me.
It's the hardest thing in the world.
My brother got one in the lung.
You remember?
If he catches you, he was going to box the head in.
We can't wait to get back to Scotland.
My brother is still fuming with that.
Oh, good?
My brother turned around and goes, I think I'm about to get shot.
I mean, man, and see on the drive home, yeah, we are looking because we look back in the mirror and them two look defeated.
Oh, yeah.
Looking at the floor like 4 in the morning, probably off bleeding forward or none or something. And they,
like a bottle of water in my hand, I swear to put us through the back window.
They were defeated, yeah. They couldn't think of that. And we were like, boys, that was probably too far, innit? And then we are checking our Instagram and all, you're seeing they were doing it for charity, and we were like, boys, that was too far, boys. I mean, man,
I can't believe that was you.
And see the episode next. We had done it with the governor at Mountjoy, and we were like, we were just sitting there, like, till the toast, and we're like, they definitely know the reds. Like, oh, fuck that. And I was like, 100% they know. 100% they know we're getting called out on this podcast. Yes. And we're going to look like tramps because this was for charity.
And where was I when he rang you?
That would have been after the live show. Would have been after the live show.
Was it? Yeah, I felt like I was out and he come over to me.
Come here,
I want you to talk to me. And I was like, what are you talking about? And you popped up on FaceTime. And I was like, oh, what's the story? And he says,
He egged Ternans and your man went, why? Your man was shit. Your man was like, hanging up and all, paro.
But did you know he was involved?
No, he was involved. But your man caught me up, but didn't say who he was, yeah?
I think it was the one that caught, was it Jared again?
Jer.
I think it was the one that caught Jer in the kidney. Right, we think it was the one that caught him.
And then messing with Jay, don't you go, think about the kidney. We seen your legs, you said, why did they hard boil legs? But they weren't hard.
No, they were, I think they were just in the fridge for hours.
Bro, they were killers. Oh. I swear, I'd have put that back with
you. That was the on Mars. And the worst part is we didn't even find the funny on the. I don't think we said a word on the way home.
Didn't get a buzz out of it?
No, we didn't even get a buzz. we literally think the lads just dropped me home. Didn't even say goodbye. I just got out of the car and just bounced. We said, nah, that was too far.
They're all out to egg someone and they're all half bleeding. Beggar's remorse over there.
Bro, we think I went home and downloaded. We part of what here. We fell third of them. We think I threw a little score in there. We literally went from training was probably at the start of that week and then I'm staying up to 4 in the morning to egg turtles.
And this week we're joined by
Claire Walsh.
Right, we'll get into it, Claire. I'm so excited to hear your story because I don't know how on God's green earth you got to where you are today. Do you want to tell us where are you from and what was life like growing up for you?
I'm from Leixlip in County Kildare. It's obviously not by the sea,
yeah.
But so much of my childhood I remember being by the sea, whether that was on summer holidays at different spots in Ireland. Dad, kind of from an early age, taught me like, firstly, a respect for the sea, but he taught me how to play in the water. And that's what I remember being a kid, just having the crack, like stupid games, like getting smacked by waves, laughing, rolling on your arse and then getting back up again, water in your face. There was definitely an ease in water from an early age. Dad then took a swim and we went into swimming lessons. And I did that, I guess, it's one of my earliest memories, right up until I was 18. We went swimming a couple of times a week. So kind of the water has always felt like it's been a big part of my life. Once I didn't go traveling until I was a little bit older. So I was in my 30s and I headed off. I went traveling to South America and I had great crack. And I wanted to do scuba diving. That was my thing I wanted to do on that trip. I went scuba diving. It was great. Loved it. Fun. And you get to see the fish and there's turtles and it's cool. And then I remember being somewhere and someone said, I was saying, like, there's a lot of equipment, isn't there? Like, it's quite cumbersome. And someone said, then you should try freediving. I was like, yeah, cool. I don't know what it is. And I'd be a little bit similar if someone says I should try something. I'm just not going to do it. Unless I find it for myself, I probably am going to do it. But, you know, so I'm on this really cool trip. And I don't know if it was weeks or months later, I was in Belize. I was snorkeling, I was with a group of lads from Australia and they just seemed to be good in the water. They just seemed to be good at most things. So off they went. They went down from the surface into a cave and out the other side. Now, I'm a little bit competitive and I tried to do it with them and my ears just screeched with pain. So I came up and really nonchalantly afterwards, you know, with the beer and the handgun, so come here, what was that? So they described freediving. They did this course. I was like, yeah, no, that sounds cool. And then I literally took out my phone, went into Wi-Fi and looked where I could learn it. And I was gone the next day over to Honduras, an island off Honduras called Utila. And I did my first freediving course and I haven't put a tank of air on my back since. No more scuba after that.
Right. Take us back a little bit. So when you were in school, let's say, did you have an idea you were always going to do something that involved being in the water, as in a swim or anything?
I hadn't a clue. I'd done like speech and drama. I loved speech and drama. I loved doing shows. And like after school, I went on to do drama. So I think I wanted to be an actor. Then after my degree, I went to London to do a master's. And after that, things didn't go very well. I was quite ill. I was just knocked on my arse, like with mental illness. And that kind of went on for a couple of years. And it was a real time of, I'd say finding my feet, but it wasn't. I was just trying to keep going. So there was never any aspiration of what I would be. I've definitely changed careers quite a lot, or I don't even know if you call it a career. I changed jobs a lot. and seemed to just try and figure out what was in front of me and approach it with a bit of, sure, look, I'll give it a go. But it's very easy to say now, oh, I was brave and I just was giving things a go. I felt really ashamed of it. Like, my friends were studying to be social workers, accountants, teachers, whatever they're doing. And I felt like a little bit of a flake. I was always really embarrassed anytime a job asked me for my CV, because my CV said performer-ish, puppeteering, movement direction, gospel choir musical director. You know, it was pretty eclectic. And then, you know, I'm going, and I also like breathing. You know, I teach breath. So it never felt like there was a through line. So I was always quite self-conscious about that. And freediving, you know, I didn't set out to make a career of it, and I haven't. It is something that I do. But once I found it, I couldn't let it go. I tried to. I came home and was like, well, that's it. You know, just as my tan will fade, I'll forget about freediving. But it just wasn't the case. And I think it was the mental aspect that really, really, really pulled me in. Like, you know, if you experience mental illness or trying to balance mental health, you know, it's recommended that you do loads of things like go for a walk or take a nice bath, or, you know, there's loads of things that you can do to supplement mental wellness. But when I was mentally ill, and I find that's quite an important differentiation. When I was mentally ill, you know, you're just trying to keep going. So all these things like, oh, you should try yoga, you should do meditation, you should go for a walk, you should do all these things. And I'm going, no, no, no. Firstly, I was too sick to get any of the benefits. So when I was feeling a little bit better and then I found freediving, suddenly, you know, you're in this sport where you can't lie to yourself. You can't pretend and say, yeah, I'm doing really well, because it's just you and your thoughts. So you have to find a way of making peace with your own brain. It's really hard to do.
Mm.
So I think that was probably the first time, maybe outside like counseling or therapy, that I tried to make friends with the different thoughts and feelings that can be really overwhelming. I tried to find a way through it.
Yeah. So in what year are we talking here, Claire?
Oh, this is where it gets really messy. 2015 was when I first tried freediving. So nearly 10 years now, which is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And when I hear you speak about it, I kind of draw comparisons with Formula One driving, because there's no margin for error in that. Yeah. They're so in tune, they're so switched on, they're so reactive, they're so aware of everything that's going on.
Yeah.
Simultaneously, they're so aware, but that's chaotic because it's just like flashing lights. I could nearly describe freediving the same thing, but it's silent.
It's quiet. It's the first line in my book. Let's see if I can get it. Underwater, you don't hear anything. Putting my face in the water is like a sigh of relief for my mind. Racing thoughts and internal chatter fade away, and I am lulled by the sound of the water in my ears. Something like that. And that's what it is. Freediving for me is quietness, and not just from the sound around me, from the sound in here, from the sound that is like usually racing through my brain. And sometimes it's pretty benign. It's just me going, what do I have to do tomorrow? Did I get that done today? The normal kind of internal dialogue. And then sometimes it's some really, really horrible, toxic, I don't know, ways of talking to yourself. So free diving for me is quietness. It's peace. Just a little more.
Thanks to Roy Style Furniture for coming on board. And remember, if you just moved in or the place is looking a bit pre-loved, don't sleep on this.
Unless it's on one of the Class Ottoman beds, two of which come in the house package, by the way, with mattresses and all.
Roy Style Furniture is the place to go. Irish guaranteed, family run, and they actually care about what goes in your home.
You'll find them at Fonthill, Belgard and Omni Park. Open 7 days a week and late on Thursdays and Fridays in Fonthill and Omni.
They're a one-stop shop for the lot, and we've got you sorted with a promo code.
Yeah, we do. Visit www.roystyle.ie and use promo code GET10 for 10% off. Right price, right style, right now.
Subscribe to this podcast for free on the Go Loud app. What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a little more. Try your wits in it now. Till your body, your head. Walk it high.
The Hypnocker.